Well, good morning. Hope you're all doing well this morning. It's great to be together and to worship God together. Hopefully you've felt some encouragement this morning as you've been greeted and as we've spent time singing together. That is our hope as we gather. Well, I want to welcome those of you who it might be your first time or maybe you've visited a few times. We're just glad you're here. We hope that you'll stick around afterward. Let us say hi, get to know you a little bit, and hopefully you'll feel welcome being here. Well, as we continue on in our series, Walking with Christ, in our reading of the Sermon on the Mount this year, I want to start with a story. And this man may or may not be the world's luckiest man. In fact, he might be the world's unluckiest man. There's this music teacher, and his name is Frayn Selak. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. I'm probably butchering his name. But he's from Croatia, and as I said, he might be the luckiest or the unluckiest man in the world. You get to decide that this morning. It was a cold January day in 1962, and Frayn was traveling from Sarajevo to Dubrovnik by train. Well, little did he know, this would mark the beginning of a 40-year odyssey marked with strange and freak accidents and near-death experiences. You see, this train, it inexplicably jumped the tracks and it plunged into an icy river, killing 17 passengers. Frayn Selak, he managed to swim to shore. He suffered hypothermia, shock, bruises, and a broken arm, but he was very much alive. Well, 1 year later, Selak was on a plane traveling from Zagreb to, Rijeka. I know that's not how you pronounce it. But he's in this plane when the door blew off the plane, and he was sucked out of the aircraft. A few minutes later, this plane crashed, and 19 people were killed. Selak woke up in a hospital. He had been found in a haystack and had only minor injuries. In 1966, he was riding on a bus. You see a pattern here. He needs to stop traveling. He's riding on a bus that went off the road and into a river. Four people were killed, but not Frayn. He suffered only cuts and bruises. In 1970, he was driving along in his car when suddenly it caught fire, and he managed to stop and get out just before the fuel tank exploded and engulfed the car in flames. In 1973, driving a different car, a faulty fuel pump sprayed gas all over the engine. It blew flames through the air vents, and his only injury? Well, he lost most of his hair. And at this point, his friends started to call him Lucky. That was his nickname now. In 1995, he was hit by a city bus, but he received only minor injuries. A year later, 1996, he was driving on a mountain road when he turned a corner and saw a truck coming straight at him. He drove the car through a guardrail, jumped out, and landed in a tree. He watched his car explode 300 feet below. By this time, he's starting to get this international reputation for his survival, and he said, you could look at this in two ways. I am either the world's luckiest man or the unluckiest. I prefer to believe the latter. How does the story of Frayn Selak end? How does this end? In June 2003, at the age of 74, Selak bought his first lottery ticket in 40 years. And he won more than $1 million. I'm going to enjoy my life now, he said. I feel like I have been reborn. I know that God was watching over me all these years. He told reporters that he planned to buy a house, a car, and a speedboat. I don't know. And he planned to marry his girlfriend. Well, in 2004, Selak was hired to star in an Australian television commercial for Doritos. At first, he accepted the job, but then he changed his mind because he refused to fly to Sydney for the filming. The reason? He didn't want to test his luck. So Frayne Selak had not done anything wrong to anyone in his life. He was minding his own business most of the time, yet he went through these disasters. It seems like the world was not treating him the way that he would like to be treated. And in our passage this morning, we're going to read from the Sermon on the Mount, one of the most famous verses in Scripture. We'll be reading about the golden rule, what we should do to others what we would like for them to do to us. So let's read this passage. It's just one verse this morning. So if you'll turn over to Matthew chapter 7, we're going to read verse 12 together, and it'll be up on the screen if you need it. Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Jesus said, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." And I'd like to read another version of this. We're probably more familiar with the way the NIV puts this passage. At least this is the way it gets repeated oftentimes. And Jesus said, "So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets." The name for this verse in Scripture isn't one that's just given as part of Jesus' sermon. He didn't call it the Golden Rule. We know, of course, that the headers in our Bibles, those were added later by modern printers of the Bible. But the title isn't necessarily one of modernity. In fact, the Golden Rule moniker can be traced to accounts that claim that the Emperor Alexander Severus had this passage inscribed in gold on the wall of his throne room. Thus, Matthew 7:12 was called the Golden Rule, as far back as 222 AD. And that's not for certain. If there is something for certain, there are accounts of it being called this by the end of the Middle Ages, where this passage was called the Golden Rule. If anything, we can know, as we read this passage this morning, that there is a golden quality to this rule that we hear. At the time that Jesus is presenting this message, these ancient Jews already had a form of this rule. They already lived somewhat by this rule. Like many of Jesus' Beatitudes, he often begins with the sayings and the rules of their lives that they already lived and they had already memorized in their life. But what Jesus often did was he would flip them around and he would change the perspective for the people hearing this passage again in this great sermon. So in this case, in this verse, this rule, as they knew it, read more from a negative perspective. Let me show you this on the screen here. They would know it as a negative thing. They would say, whatever you don't want done to you, don't do to other people. That's how they lived their life, something of that sort. This is not a direct quote, but they lived this way. You know, if you don't enjoy being robbed, well, don't rob other people. If you don't enjoy being cursed, don't curse other people. If you don't enjoy being hated, well, then don't hate others. If you don't enjoy, I don't know, being clubbed over the head, don't club people over the head. Sound advice, right? This comes from a negative angle, though. Whatever you don't like, well, don't do that to other people then. We'll all be good if we live that way. Well, as Jesus likes to do, he takes the rule and he flips it around on them. He takes it, you know, this rule for living, he changes the perspective and he gives a more positive tense, a more positive, proactive sense of this rule. He says, do to others the things you would like done to you. So instead of don't do, he says, do. This sounds more positive, right? I think it does. Instead of avoiding bad things now you're going out. You are now serving others with good things. If everyone lived this way, wouldn't we see a better community around us? If people were kind to one another, there might be more kindness. It's part of Jesus' character, isn't it? This is part of his character, that he would urge the people to be more proactive in the way that they treated one another. In the culture, they would only be out for themselves and their immediate families. It was difficult for the Jews. It was a difficult life. They needed to be focused on their future, how to take care of themselves. They need to make sure they're following the law. They have to be watchful for the negative forces that are out in the world. And proverbially, as a proverb, I guess, they didn't have time to spend for other people because they didn't know what would happen to themselves next. They didn't know if they'd be destitute tomorrow, if they'd be in need, so they needed to take care of themselves. But Jesus says, you know, make sure you are taking the time to look out for other people, something they might not have been as used to doing. How did Jesus get them to see that this was more important to look to serve others in good deeds and kindness? How did he point to the positive, proactive stance in this colloquial saying? How did he do that? He pointed to the law and the prophets. And again, they had heard sayings like this before, but he decides to use the law, to use the prophets, to get them to see how they needed to act in the future. So what does he do here? He says, in everything, do to others what you would have to do them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. Again, that's the NIV, but in my ESV it says, for this is the law and the prophets. Jesus has said this phrase in just a few other passages in his teachings about the law and the prophets. What are the others? There's this one, and then over in Matthew 5, we read this one in a previous sermon, Matthew 5, 17 and 18. He says, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot will pass from the law until all is accomplished. And another place in Matthew 22, verses 34 through 40, it's a very, very well-known passage here about the greatest commands. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commands depend all the law and the prophets. See a pattern here with his phrasing. When Jesus refers to this saying here, that this sums up the law and the prophets, he's telling the people who are listening that this is who I am. This is Jesus. His character, his witness, his mission, and his purpose. This is who he is. And this should be ours too. Our mission, our purpose. This is, should be our character, our witness to the world. Jesus is telling them that all the law of Moses, everything that the prophets prophesied in the Old Testament, they have read these things and they have memorized them. They are following this regularly in their lives. They sum up his teaching and in these particular specific things. And what do we see here? Nothing in the law and prophets will pass away until it's all accomplished. We see that the great command, the greatest commands, like loving the Lord your God, loving your neighbor, and now do to others as you would have them do to you. It seems simple, right? It seems like something we can do. These are actually very lofty expectations. These go beyond what we would naturally do. This right living that he's talking about. These are expectations that go beyond, especially what these Jews would do. He's telling them to step outside of themselves for once. Be more like him. Do good for others. This is how you love God. This is how you love your neighbor. Be proactive in looking to do good for other people. The golden rule, it captures this moral and spiritual intention that undergirds the whole of the Old Testament, especially how it relates to God's image bearers and how we treat one another. At its core, it is simply an expression of his divine love. something Scripture embodies from Genesis to Revelation. As we like to say it, from index to maps, right? I love how Charles Spurgeon writes about this verse in Matthew. This theologian, Charles Spurgeon, he says, "This is the sum of the Decalogue, the Pentateuch, and the whole sacred word. Oh, that all men acted on it, and then there would be no slavery, no war, no sweating, no striking, no lying, no robbing, but all would be justice and love. What a kingdom is this which has such a law? This is the Christian code. This is the condensation of all that is right and generous. We adore the King out of whose mouth and heart such a law could flow. This one rule is a proof of the divinity of our holy religion. The universal practice of it by all who call themselves Christians would carry conviction to Jew, Turk, and infidel with greater speed and certainty than all the apologies and arguments which the wit or piety of men could produce. Lord, teach it to me. Write it on the fleshly tablets of my renewed heart. Write it out full in my life." In our study of Hebrews last Sunday, we read this great passage in chapter 11, and it applies to Jesus, or it applies to what Jesus is telling these people and what they're hearing today in the great sermon. It's actually in verse 24 of chapter 10 that we read this. He says, "Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works." Let us do that. We can stir up one another when we're loving each other and doing good things for each other as we would want to be treated ourselves. And we stir up others to that too. Excuse me. These verses that we're reading, they speak powerfully to our hearts because they powerfully show us Jesus, don't they? No one has ever loved like Jesus. No one. Friend or foe, his love was a river of compassion, of grace and mercy. Look to Jesus and his love for sinners like you and me to see the golden rule in real life. Look at it the way that he handled his persecutors as he went to the cross. He loved everyone so much. Well, so what? So what? What does this mean for us? We need to look at the way that we treat other people. Are we merely avoiders of pain, as the ancient Jews lived, where we would keep things away? Do we simply not seek out to hurt others? Do we avoid those whose lifestyles or decisions that we don't like? Do we cross the proverbial street when some sinner is walking our way? I know we might justify that, right? Hey, I'm not hurting others. I don't steal from other people. I don't curse my neighbors. Jesus is telling us we need to go beyond that. We need to go beyond that. Have you been actively seeking to do good to others? Do you see someone in need? And do you go fulfill that need? Do you have a neighbor that has high grass? Do you go complain to the HOA? Do you knock on the door and ask if you can help them mow their grass for free? I see that every day on our HOA Facebook page. People complain, oh, their grass is too high, somebody know them, they have trash outside, that's not good. Instead of being a good neighbor, they complain and call them names and there must be something wrong with those people, right? Or what do? Go be a neighbor. Go be a friend and help them. Do you see a homeless person and avoid them? Or do you bring them food? You ask them if you can help them. This is a tough teaching. That's our subtitle of these lessons, right? Tough teaching. This is a tough teaching. Here. It's because Jesus is asking us to go and be proactive bringers of joy and good news. There will be no disappointment when we do that. He is that good. He is that wonderful. Many of us, we have committed this verse to memory. We know this. Now, today, let's commit this golden rule to our life. Our neighbors need it. Our community needs it. If the 29th and Yale congregation is going to grow, we need to grow out of our love for other people and to be proactive in showing that and be positive to the world around us, to the people around us. How will they know that we love them if we don't go out and show them that we care? Excuse me, I've got something in my throat this morning. Well, this morning, maybe this is something that you don't feel ready for. We've got our lives together. Sometimes we get hard-hearted when we see others who don't. Our goal should be to take these things that Jesus is teaching and to move forward into living it out. To taking these teachings, these tough teachings, and saying, Jesus, help me to do this. Just one simple verse this morning, I know. And it was hard for me to prepare this lesson knowing how tough it is to live out the golden rule. Everybody's got this memorized. Even non-believers know the golden rule. And they'll be ready to tell you, as a Christian, when you're not living the golden rule. How about if we show them the golden rule and they see it and say, wow, this believer, this Christian, lives the golden rule. That's impressive. I want to know more about this Jesus that teaches this. That's our invitation this morning. Do you need prayer in that? It's hard. It's tough. But we can pray. We can talk to God and say, God, help me. I need help practicing this in my life. And we want to do that. We are a family and we can do that. We can come together and pray over each other when we need help. That's our invitation this morning. If you need prayer for this, we're going to have a song of invitation here in just a moment. I'll be down front here. One of our other elders will be down on this side. We're both going to be prepared and ready to pray for you if you need prayer this morning. Or you might have another need in your life. Maybe there's something else that you're struggling with, trying to get through this day, trying to get through the week. We want to pray for you. So we're going to have this song of invitation right now. Let's stand and sing, and if you have any need, come now.